And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you. And, well, this is actually very unusual. As you know, I've been traveling around the world for the last bunch of weeks. And right now I'm in, well, as you can probably tell from the sound, I'm in Tokyo. It's around 8 in the morning on a Friday. And for some reason, I am standing very close to a fish market, about to have a whole lot of sushi with my friend Dave, who has come over from New York. And he's the one actually responsible for bringing it here. Dave, what's the name of this fish market?
I don't know.
You don't know the name of the fish market?
No, I'm bad at remembering those kind of names. I just call it the Tokyo Fish Market.
Well, that's a good enough name. Let's just call it the Tokyo Fish Market for now. It's the biggest fish market in the world?
In Japan, at least.
And Japan probably has the biggest fish market in the world.
They're the biggest fish consumers.
Yeah, they certainly are. Always eating fish. Now, we just went through this huge
market,
but it's an endless building filled with nothing but fish products. I mean, I don't know where to begin, but lots of octopus, lots of a fish of all sorts, tuna, flounder. We saw huge fish being sliced with machinery of sorts, slicing machinery.
Bandsaw.
Yeah, and it's just a hub of activity. Now, I don't quite know why. I mean, we were supposed to get here at around 7 in the morning. It's just like nothing I expected. I mean, I expected craziness, but this is really zombified craziness. In a good way. I'm not saying that in a bad way. Now, maybe we should describe some of the noises going on around us. There's all these vehicles of sorts. What are those vehicles?
They're vehicles. I don't remember what they were called, but they have a funny name.
Well, there's one coming by. Maybe the name is written on the side of it. But
no, that's not one in English.
Okay. There are these motorized vehicles. People are driving at high speeds. I guess big loading zone type things. But everyone has one. And they're just driving around. There's motorcycles, there's bicycles, there's pedestrians, there's trucks. Yeah, and there's one of them right now. Now, we're in a section that has a whole bunch of stores, and we're outside a sushi place right now.
If you tell your listeners to hold on, if you just wait a minute, I'll come back and tell you what it's called.
What the sushi place is called,
no,
or what the vehicles are called?
Vehicles are called.
Well, I can just keep talking, and, why don't you go chase after one of them and find out what it is. Don't get hurt. And I'll just continue standing here. I have to say, it's really a very bizarre type of setting that I'm in. It's unusual enough for me to get up this time of morning, but to get up and go to a fish market, and then afterwards be expected to go out and get sushi, it's really 7 in the evening in New York. Maybe somehow I can make my system adjust.
It's called a mighty car.
A mighty car. Now, Dave, what's the name of this sushi place that we're waiting outside of?
Sushi Dai.
Sushi Dai. It sounds like a rather ominous name. Did you hear about this someplace?
I read about it somewhere in a book.
And it's supposed to be like the best sushi in the world, right?
I don't know if it's the best sushi in the world. It's supposed to be the best sushi here.
Okay. Well, it's probably going to be pretty good, and it's cheap.
Probably.
All right. This is how I'm starting my day. This being Friday. What's the day of the? I don't even know what. I think it's the 9th. I think it's September 9th. And we have a full day of activity planned of various sorts. What's going on now?
They're having the elections for the House of Representatives, and one of the candidates whose advertising slogan is Manifesto is walking through the fish market wearing a sash and shaking people's hands.
Oh, wow. Well, we should have interviewed him. That would have been something. The election is in 2 days, and the main topic in this country is postal reform, and that's actually going to decide the direction the government goes. So in 2 days, we get to experience that. That's going to be a fascinating thing right there. If I sound kind of out of it, well, there's a couple of reasons for it. It's because it's 8 in the morning, and it's also because I'm just kind of in shock and awe here of seeing all this activity, and I've never seen so much fish in my life. A lot of them still alive. We saw angry crabs that were breaded while they were still alive, and they didn't seem to go for that at all. And just trying to stay alive, too, because you take your life in your hands and you're walking down even the sidewalk here. All these vehicles going by at high speeds. It's really been something else. Any thoughts about Tokyo in general? Are you having fun here?
To be totally honest, Tokyo is not my cup of tea. I'm from New York City, and I've always lived in New York, so I'm used to big cities. And I'm starting to discover it's not really very relaxing for me to leave my big city and just go to another big city.
Yeah, I think a lot of people find that to be true. But as far as big cities, Tokyo is one of the biggest and one of the most active. And it's something to be believed. Just traveling on the train system alone, maybe we'll do that a little bit later too. That is, it sucks the life right out of you. But, you know, life gets push back into you in some other way. Next sound you hear will probably be something a little bit more peaceful. Let's find out. Well, that certainly made a difference. I have to say that was some of the best sushi I've had in a long time. What do you think, Dave?
I thought it was great. The only thing that I was a little disappointed is that they didn't put anything down kind of live in front of us and kill it with a cleaver.
Do they really do that sometimes?
Last time I was here, that happened.
Do you know what it was they killed?
It looked like an underwater sea spider.
There's some of the strangest things that, that I've ever seen. But you gotta understand, it's like so weird to wake up at 6 in the morning like we did, go down to this crazy place where everyone's driving these wacky vehicles around, seeing all kinds of, like, murdered fish and dying fish and breaded crabs and other things like that, and then wait outside this little tiny sushi place for a half hour, and then sit down in this tiny sushi place and actually get really good food at like, 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning. To be honest, I didn't know what to expect. I mean, it just seemed awfully strange and weird, but it was cool. And now, where are we now, Dave? We're in some kind of a park.
Yeah, we're in a park right now, Emmanuel. That's all I know.
Well, you brought us here. Is there something special about this park?
I told somebody, a friend of mine, that I like trees, and he said, go to this park.
And pay 3,000 yen, too.
Right.
Okay, 300 yen.
$3.
Yeah, about $3, which is good. That's fine. You know, we're sitting inside this nice little park with all kinds of wildlife and strange things. I don't know if you can hear the crows. There's crows all over the place. And they sound different than the crows back home. Do you notice the difference, Dave?
No, I don't know crows back home. I live in New York City.
You don't have crows. Well, okay. On Long Island, we have crows. And they're the first thing that wake you up in the morning, in the summer anyway. And they just have a different tone to them. Like, the kinds of crows that are here, they wouldn't survive back in New York because they'd be made mockeries of. It's just very interesting how wildlife is just a little bit different. Like, the crickets sound a little different, crows sound a little different. There are some things crawling around that you wouldn't see crawling around back home and vice versa. It's really it's something else. What are some of the other highlights we've done? We went to the electronic neighborhood yesterday. What's that called?
Akihabara.
And that was wild because there's all kinds of... We went to like a ham radio store where there were, I think, 5 different floors, and they sold all kinds of little pieces of electronic equipment. We wound up buying a mouse for a computer there for, what, $2?
Yeah, for a couple bucks. I think the funniest thing that I saw there, not really like an electronic component or anything like that, but there was a home karaoke kit. But the thing is, it was the way it was written in English on it, that it was a karaoke practice kit. So I said to my friend, who I can't remember his name right now, but he's a very nice man, thank you for taking us there, that I asked him if he goes and practices songs and then goes out to sing with karaoke. He says he doesn't do that, and luckily he's sane and he doesn't do karaoke at all, I don't believe. But he said a lot of people really do that. They practice at home over and over and over again, a single song, so they can go out and perform it drunk with a group of their friends.
On Thursday nights?
On a Thursday night.
That's a Japanese thing. Yeah, I think it sort of takes away the spontaneity of it when you practice karaoke.
Like practicing sex.
Which, yeah, I guess a number of people feel the need to do. But it's one of those Japanese cultural things, just like cramming people onto the subway. We want to experience that, too, I think, Monday morning rush hour.
I don't want to be crammed onto a subway.
Well, we want to watch people being crammed onto subways.
Yeah, there's a book I have claims to know the author has been living in Tokyo for 10 years. He's like a gaijin, like, you know, former Brit or American or something along those lines. He says this is where you stand to watch all the melee without getting shoved onto a train.
Well, we're going to try to film it because I think it would be pretty cool if they let us do that. But the train system here is just so incredibly advanced. It's beyond my understanding. I got very confused as soon as I got to the city. I think everybody does to a degree. It still is something you could study for a long, long time and not completely understand. Basically, there's three different systems, underground and above ground, that we would qualify as subways in New York, but they're sort of independent systems, and you can't really go from one to the other without having to get a new ticket unless you get a day pass or something. It's very complicated. And I don't even want to think about it now because I get a headache when I do. We're here for another few days. I'm going to be on a freighter heading across the Pacific Ocean for 10 days. That's going to be fun. And Dave will be flying back to New York in, I guess, less than a week's time. This is the second time you've been here, right?
This is the second time I've been here. I think even less than a week's time. 4 days, am I leaving?
Yeah, I think probably 4 days from now. And by the time people hear this, you'll probably be back.
By the time you hear this, I'm at home.
And you will have lived the same day twice.
I don't know what you mean by that.
Well, what I mean by that is that you leave, and you arrive actually before you leave, because back in New York, and this is where I always get very confused, but back in New York, it's still yesterday. So while it may be 10 o'clock or so in the morning here, and that's only a theory that it might be 10 o'clock in the morning here, it's really 9 o'clock in the evening yesterday back home.
Well, the problem is, well, I sleep on airplanes, and I slept on the way here, but I got on a plane on a Monday, and I got off a Tuesday night, and the thing is, when you cross the international dateline, they steal your dreams, so, you know, I have no recollection of even being on an airplane, let alone being asleep.
You get those back, though, when you go back the other way.
Right. That's if you fly back over the international dateline the other way, but I'm flying via Australia and Antarctica, I believe. I haven't checked the map.
You're taking the train.
The train without tracks, they call it.
Trans-Antarctica Express. Okay, as you can tell, you know, it's really early in the morning for us, and we had a lot of sushi, and it's awfully cool. The things you can do here in Tokyo, and there's many more things that we can do and we'll try to do. We want to go to a sumo wrestling match, right?
Oh, yeah, we're going to try to go see the sumo season starts September 11th, which is, like, being an American, I think it's such a stupid day. I'd like to do anything, but, like, you know, I'm from New York City. I'm so sick of people, September 11th, and remember this and remember that. So I want to witness, basically, the election of the House of Representatives in Japan is on September 11th, and that's a much smarter way to remember the day. And then also it's the start of the sumo wrestling season. And it's only 1,500,000 yen per person, is that right?
1,500,000 yen per person. Gee, that's a real bargain. Did they pair up the election day and the opening of sumo wrestling intentionally?
Yeah, it's also horse sashimi day. and apparently in Tokyo they trot in a pony, and they trot it from restaurant to restaurant, and it stops in front of each restaurant, and they cut a strip of, they give it a what's it called? You give a pregnancy, it's a, you, the needle in the spine, what's that called? Epidural. So they give this pony an epidural, and then they trot it around from restaurant to restaurant, cutting strips of sashimi off of its hindquarters.
Dave, as you can tell, is a real restaurateur who travels the globe and spreads all kinds of knowledge and experiences far and wide. You know, it's been something. It's always fun traveling with you. I went to Madrid, and no, actually I went to Barcelona. I went to Madrid and Barcelona and Lisbon. and Paris. Oh, wow. It's all coming back to me now. And we always had the best meals. We always had some really interesting experiences. And I think the choppers are coming for us now. But last night, we had a really good experience. Actually, we had a couple of good experiences, but last night, I think, was one of the best. Because we were walking around, and after a while, you know, when you're walking around a strange city, and you're looking for food, and you're starting to get angry because you can't find food, and all the lights and noise. And
I was about to hit someone, and this gentleman next to me is the only person that was in striking range. And then suddenly we saw one of these restaurants, and I'm sure there's a word for it in Japanese, but in English what we call it is a restaurant that lists the food that they have on the outside written on little wooden boards, and everything costs under $4 a plate. And we basically pointed to random groupings of Chinese characters on a menu, and we brought a delicious feast.
Well, yeah, I mean, this was amazing because we walked into this place. First of all, you know, we just saw a crowd of people inside, and this was after going past all kinds of grotesque fast food looking places and really loud, obnoxious, like touristy type things. We just look in, we see all these Japanese people who are seriously eating food and just, you know, getting right down to it. And places like that, you don't see anybody who is a tourist, and the prices are pretty damn good. And we walked into this place, and they didn't speak a word of English. We didn't speak a word of Japanese, maybe a word or two. But, Dave, I mean, I saw you communicate with this old woman in there, and the two of you were just saying completely different things, but somehow you were getting the point across. You were, like, pointing to certain... The menu just had weird words and colors. And you were pointing to random things, and they were, like, having a conversation with you about it. You were nodding and smiling, and somehow that translated into us getting really good food.
I used one of my three or four words of Japanese. I really know. When it comes to languages and food, I never remember them at the time, but I could sit down and I could write out maybe the names of 30 Japanese pieces of food. On the spot, the only thing that came to mind was mackerel, which is saba. And then when they trotted out that pony, they trotted out the waiter who knew a little bit of English, and I was trying to indicate I'd like a plate of fish, but I'd like to get tuna, and I was using there's maguro and there's teka. So I used the teka word, which was the wrong word in this case, but I pointed at our plate of saba, which I had ordered by name, and he just looked at me and said, "No. That is called saba." It's like, well, I know, I ordered it. Hello?
And then he brought us French fries.
Yeah, that was I thought that, we were thinking that it might have been a slight diss on American culture. But then I looked over, and the two distinctly Japanese gentlemen, who one of them looked like he might have been Japanese for the last 50, 60 years even, had a plate of hot dogs and ketchup sitting in front of them. So, go figure.
Yeah, you know, and that's not the first time I saw hot dogs on a menu that night either. So, apparently, you know, certain things are catching on over here. But that really was a good meal, I think, we had.
Oh, I thought it was fantastic. And it was really good. It was really cheap. I mean, even the beer, had two large beers that in New York City would easily cost $8 to $10 a bottle for $4 each.
And this is Tokyo. This is Tokyo, supposedly the most expensive city in the world. I believe it is officially ranked that, right?
I believe so. Except for Kuala Lumpur is actually more expensive, but only because nobody who lives there has any money.
Well, if that's... I guess that does make a degree of...
It makes it very difficult to buy things.
So nothing gets sold.
That's right. Therefore, the prices are extremely high.
See, as you can tell, economics is something else I don't know anything about. But, yeah, I guess, you know, if you've studied that for a number of years, that makes perfect sense. But from what I understand, Tokyo, Osaka, Helsinki, those are the most expensive cities.
Well, I know definitely if it comes to alcohol prices, and I mean, I actually don't drink at all, but for some reason I know about these alcohol prices. And in Helsinki and some other really, really far cities, I remember 10 years ago, people were saying, oh, if you go there, it's $9 American for a beer. And that was when a beer in New York was $3. So, I mean, I can only imagine... Yeah, I think it's the having... What I heard is they're having a little bit of a an economic slump here in Japan, and I haven't mentioned to anyone that their stock market crashed 16 years ago, but I read in a book, and I read a lot of things in books, but I read in a book that they had like an extremely, extremely high unemployment rate for people in, you know, my demographic. I'm in my mid-30s. And but because of this, there's such a huge art boom, because we take a culture where people were, you know, working, you know, 70, 80 hour weeks, and suddenly you give a 30% unemployment rate for youth, there's a lot of time to make rock and roll, and there's a lot of time to take photos and to paint paintings, which is great.
It is great, and a lot of time to walk around parks, which I notice a lot of people here are doing, as we're actually sitting in the middle of the path in this park, which is getting louder and louder. All kinds of nature creatures are coming out and making their various noises at us. But people in Tokyo, they seem both relaxed and stressed at the same time. I'm not quite sure how that works. But they're always busy doing something, whether it's having fun or working or riding the train to do one of each.
It's the, you know, kind of yin-yang and of, you know, Eastern living. Like, we're sitting in this park with these, you know, extremely well-manicured 300-year-old trees, and I'm looking over, you know, looking over this one cypress tree, and I'm seeing this totally new, you know, glass and, you know, blue glass and steel building, which is, you know, they've built three floors of it just while I was sitting here. It just keeps getting taller and taller.
They move fast here. There's no question about that. The city has grown since I've been in it, only a few days, and the Japanese simply amaze me. And I guess this is a good sort of, you know, final stop for me. I mean, I still have a ways to go, but as far as foreign cities, this is the last foreign city I'm going to be seeing. I don't count Long Beach as a foreign city.
Well, I count California as a foreign city.
Unfortunately, it's one I've seen before. Actually, that came out wrong. I don't mean to diss the people of California in any way, shape, or form.
You're extremely strange, extremely foreign to me.
Me or California?
California.
Oh, yeah. Well, California is a very weird place, but
yeah.
let's not focus on it too much. We're going to get mail, and we hate getting mail. Well, let's just pretend that we're Italian or something.
Okay. What I'm going to do when these Americans come by, I'm going to say, excuse me, do you have the time?
How can you tell they're Americans from a distance?
I just have that feeling.
Are you going to test this theory and ask them the time?
I am going to test the theory.
Right, let's see what happens.
Let's see. Yeah, and they're getting closer and closer. Excuse me, do you have the time?
11:10.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. That they sounded very American to me.
Yeah. Well, you can tell they're American is because the guy said 11:10. The girl didn't have a watch, and instead of saying I don't have a watch, she just said, and that's American.
Did she look at her arm, too?
Yes.
She looked at her arm, which had no watch on it.
That's correct.
Well, what the hell is that? I mean, why would you do that? What's the point? We can see you don't have a watch. What's the point looking at your arm? Yeah, all right. Well, they're on their way to look at nature or something like that. You know what we should be doing? We should be on our way into the city, the busy part of the city, because we've got some friends to meet over there. Actually, we have some friends to meet at night, so let us have it become night now, and we'll join our friends over in Shibuya. Is that the name of the part of the town?
Shibuya is where they have the brass dog.
The bronze dog.
If you ever live in Tokyo, and let's say you meet somebody on the internet and you're going on a first date, you will meet them under the bronze dog.
Because for some reason that's where people meet. It's outside the train station, and so far two people that we've met have suggested that we meet at that very spot. Of course, I got it wrong the first time. I met at the wrong dog, but it all worked out in the end.
Yeah, I think you met at the pewter dog. Ceramic dog.
There were ceramic dogs nearby. I figured how many different kinds of dogs could there be, and I'm sorry I ever asked that question. But that's like a very busy part of town. What's the other busy part of town that we're close to?
Shinjuku. And Shinjuku is one of the only places in, like, you know, really a first world nation where you can get dog sashimi. St. Bernard or... it's really only the big... what are the big ones? Like Marmaduke.
I think you're spreading misinformation now.
dog sashimi?
Great Dane.
Yeah, well, and let's just mention one of the town, one of the part of town that you were in. You were in a cool part yesterday where there's all kinds of used shops.
Yes, I was in Canada, and I was in Jimbo Jambo, which is not really the name of it, but that's basically all that stuck in my head for me to find it on a map again. But I found amazing used bookstores with English language books and Japanese books and art books, and I ended up buying this children's book about fishes, which I love, because I call them fish, the plural, but this book was about the plural fishes, and it came with a record, a little green plastic record.
Two little green plastic records.
That's right, pages 7 through 33, and we get a pen, 34 through 56.
And the best part about this was that the book and record were from the year
1965.
And I don't think they'd been touched. It had that new 1960s book smell.
No, and the thing that was fantastic about it, they were in pristine condition, except for the owner of the bookstore felt it necessary to glue a piece of red paper to the title sheet, between the front cover and the title. That way it tore and ripped the book trying to give it to me.
And how much did you actually pay for the book?
Three hundred yen.
That's about $3.
Yeah, like $272.
About what we paid to get into this park.
$272, yes.
That's not bad. Not a bad deal there. So, yeah, there are many different parts of Tokyo, which is where we are right now on this special edition of Off the Wall. And we're going to try and see some more parts of the city in the time that we're here. But now, Dave, any final thoughts before we go join our friends?
Well, I would say that if you are to come to Tokyo, bring your Visa card, because they don't like cash and they don't take American Express.
Yeah, but you know, I feel maybe I should qualify that a little bit, because what you said might be a little bit completely wrong. I don't mean that to sound as bad as it does. But they certainly like cash a lot, and they hardly ever take credit cards. And when they do take a Visa card, they stress that they only take Japanese Visa cards, which kind of annoys me to no end.
If anyone is really going to base any of their travel recommendations on anything that I say, they'll take your Visa card.
Yeah, I'm going to just agree with that and make it easy. Okay, let's meet up with our friends. We're going to leave this park now. Well, look at that, Dave. It's now nighttime, and here we are in the middle of the city.
Wow, so fast.
I don't know how we do these things sometimes. It's the magic of radio. So we're now in, what's the name of this part of town?
Ginza.
The Ginza district. And boy, is it ever busy. There's all kinds of huge stores, chain stores. I know you love those.
This is where rich people come to die spiritually.
I think they may have died long before then. Look, we're here with our friend Stuart. Stuart, how are you?
Fine, thanks.
Now, you don't look Japanese to me.
That's right. I'm from England originally, but I've been here since 1988.
1988?
Yeah, so I came originally for a year on some volunteer work after university, and then just stayed another year and stayed another year, and I'll probably stay another year.
Yeah. That's pretty interesting. Pretty. I mean, do many people do that?
Well, there's a small community of like foreign people here who've been here a long time, and you know, in Tokyo it's like a small village because we tend to know each other. And then there's a much larger community of people who've been here for a year or two, and you know, a very transient foreign community too.
Mm-hmm. And do a lot of them stay around? Do they go back to where they came from?
Yeah, I would say most people go back within a couple of years, but you know, if you stay more than a couple of years, then you're likely to get attached here and stay longer. So,
have you completely picked up the language?
I wouldn't say completely. I can get by. I can get a job, go through a job interview in Japanese. Reading and writing Japanese is very difficult, so that's a continual study.
Can you rap in Japanese?
I can't rap.
You can.
I can't rap.
Well, say something for us at least.
What would you like? What do you?
My name is Stuart, yeah. And I like Studebakers.
Yeah, Studebakers. Yeah. Stuart des, more Studebakers daisuki des.
That was pretty fast.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
That's fluid.
Yeah, definitely. Now, can you explain, as simply as possible,
the different writing styles that Japanese have, because it's really crazy.
Okay.
I mean, in a good way, not crazy bad way, but crazy, like, interesting, like the subways.
So Japanese has three native scripts, and also the English, Roman alphabet is also used. The main script is derived from Chinese characters, and in Japan that's called the kanji. And so there are, like, in general use, about a few thousand of those kanji characters. One of the differences between Japanese and Chinese is that, like, Chinese is entirely using the Chinese characters, but Japan uses them for words, and the other parts of speech, like the verb endings and particles, are all written in another character script, which is a phonetic script called hiragana. So that's about 40 characters. And then you have a parallel script called katakana, which follows the same phonetic characters, but those are for used for foreign words and for emphasis. So the difference is a little bit like capital letters and lowercase letters. But to be fluent in Japanese, the real killer is learning enough kanji to be able to read. So
now, do people who live here, do they know all four ways of writing?
Foreign people, Japanese people, they learn it in school, and that's the way to learn it is by going to a Japanese school. If you don't, you have to put a lot of hours in learning, and they're very similar. The kanji characters are very similar, so they're very easy to confuse. So you have to have a lot of mental discipline and a good scheme, and really study hard to do that, learn that.
So I'm curious. There's language is always evolving, and there's words that describe technology now.
Yep.
How are those?
Okay, so the books that on technology and newspaper words, things like that, a lot of them are written in this katakana script. So that's mainly used, almost exclusively used for foreign words that are imported into the language. And I'm just looking around, and over there, and there's a building, and I can see the name of that building is Nagasaki Center Biru. So the center is written out in the katakana, and biru is like short for building. And that's another way that people form words in Japanese, is by actually like cutting off English words at a random point almost. So biru, building, becomes biru. And so, yeah.
McDonald's. How many syllables?
Makudonorodo.
Oh my goodness, really?
So spell it for our listeners.
Oh dear, that's Makudonarudo, I think, if I haven't missed it.
Makudonarudo.
Is that the sound of a Japanese phone ringing?
Yeah, that's my phone.
Now, Japanese phones, I should point out, are not compatible with GSM phones. In fact, this is the first time my entire trip I've had no contact whatsoever except for my satellite phone. My GSM phone doesn't work here.
I find the Japanese phones really aren't compatible with Westerners, Europeans, and Americans, because they also speak to you in Japanese, whether they're on the hook or off the hook. You make a call and you hang up the phone, and the phone basically says, "Did you remember to tell your mother that you love her?" But it says that in Japanese, and I have no idea to be able to understand what it's saying.
Well, it's interesting you should say that, because you're talking about payphones, and payphones do speak to you after you hang up.
Yes. Yeah. And I love you, Mom.
It's really something. In fact, lots of little devices are constantly speaking to you here, vending machines and phones, and it's a very machine-oriented society, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true. There's machines everywhere we look. The vending machines on almost every corner.
What's up with the vending machines? How did that ever get started?
I don't know how it started, but that was one of the first things that I noticed when I came to Japan, because in the streets of London, they wouldn't survive.
In the streets of London, they don't work.
That's right? True.
But here, just for the listener's sake, what would you say, Dave? Every block is maybe three machines?
Yeah. I mean, what's really interesting is you can walk. I've been taking just wild trips, just walking in random directions. And I'll be walking through a completely residential neighborhood, picking through their garbage and smelling their flowers. And there'll just be a cigarette machine right next to somebody's front door, or a coffee machine, next to the cigarette machine.
Yeah.
You know what I did right after we got off the air before in the park? I went to a machine. You saw me. In fact, you guided me to this machine. It was a vending machine in the middle of the park, And I got something I've never gotten from a vending machine before. I got hot tea in a can.
Yep. There's almost everything there. Hot coffee, hot tea.
So the question is, what do they do to make it hot? In my wild imagination, I see them running voltage through the can the entire time. What do you say?
I think there's like some water boiling in the back there, but that or it's on a hot plate. It must be on a hot plate. But it's
what keeps the whole thing from, you know, bursting into flames?
I have no idea. You know?
In America, it would be bursting into flames. But these machines, they're huge. They have so many different products on them. I mean, maybe they're made by the same people. I don't know. But a lot of coffee drinks, a lot of power drinks, and like they've said, cigarettes. And they're big white machines are every place, and they don't seem to detract from people going to convenience stores because they're every place as well.
That's right. One of the differences, I think, also with Japan is that the drinks in the vending machines, they change from year to year, from season to season. So, like, you know, your Coca-Cola will still be there, but the other, like the grapefruit drink that you liked last summer, you'll have to know what the can looks like this summer because it's totally rebranded. And it'll come back maybe in a few years' time. It'll come back. But in Japan, novelty is a real you know, selling point. If it's new, people will buy it. They really like novelty.
I'm gonna tell everybody what Dave is doing. Dave ran away, and the reason he ran away is because he's embarked in a secret project. He's taking pictures of fat girls in Japan, in Tokyo. And, you know, I think that's amazing because there are so few fat people here. So that whenever he sees one going by, he's back. Hey, how you doing, Dave? Nice little jog there?
Yeah, I'm breaking stereotypes through technology.
Well, that's always good to know. That's always good to do. We're also joined by Chris. You're a friend of Stuart's.
Correct, yeah. I have a story about the vending machines. A couple weeks ago, I bought a nice bottle of whiskey out of a vending machine.
Really?
Just has a nice sticker across it that says no under 20. Well, that wouldn't survive in the U.S. at all.
I don't think so. No, definitely not. The honor system, I suppose. Yeah. Chris, where are you from?
I'm from Dallas.
Dallas, and what brought you here?
Work. Never thought about visiting Japan, but now that I've been here, I really like it. It's a very, very safe place.
Now, do you live here or are you just visiting?
I live here now.
Okay. Yeah. And how long have you been here?
Almost 2 years.
Does the subway system get easier?
I decided to buy a bike.
Well, good for you, but, you know, the bicyclists on the sidewalk, that's something that I can't get used to. In China, for instance, the bicyclists are on the street. They still scare the pedestrians, but on the sidewalk really is very intimidating.
Yeah, I think I'm going to stick to riding in the street. I can't avoid people when I'm riding on the sidewalk.
The Chinese government actually tried to offer a concession, saying if the people stop spitting in the street, they can ride their bicycles on the sidewalk. But no one would do it.
You bring up an interesting point, because in China, spitting seems to be a national pastime. And I don't mean that as you know, a put-down or anything like that, but it's true. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago, and you hear the sound of spitting everywhere you go. I don't know how these things start, how they get developed, but in Japan, the national sound is slurping.
Yes.
Now, you want to tell something about that?
Well, when you're eating like Japanese noodles, like ramen and soba and things like that, there is a technique to slurping it down, which Japanese people describe, is the best way to extract the taste out of it. And so, it's not rude, and it's the way to eat the food.
It's not easy.
No.
I tried yeah. Doing it.
I noticed,
and I failed miserably. And I had brought up. In conversation at that time with our Japanese friend, eating dinner with a family I knew from Bangladesh, and they ate with their hands. And eating with your hands, I don't know if you've ever tried it, is extremely difficult if you do it the right way.
It's difficult if you do it the right way?
You only use your right hand, and
we're not going to get into the reasons for that. But
no, because you're sitting on your left. You're eating dishes with rice and a, you know, sauce, vegetables in a sauce or chicken in a sauce, and you need to take the rice and form little patties with your fingers to kind of scoop up the sauce and eat it. Now, here's the difficult thing. The food gets on your hand, and like any good American boy, when I have food on my hand, I immediately want to wipe my hand. Now,
if you do that when you're eating with your hands and you have a napkin, let's say, your napkin will have more food on it by the time you're done eating than you'll have in your stomach.
That's fascinating. Interesting. But getting back to Japan now, are there any kinds of stories you can give us as somebody who's lived here since 1988? That's a long time. First of all, have you gone back to England?
Yeah, I tend to go back, once a year, but it's difficult to go back because things have changed. So when I go back to it, like in a reverse sense, when I go back to England, I get a reverse culture shock. And in Japan, people tend to ignore you. No matter what you look like, people just won't approach you unless you approach them. So in England, when people turn and speak to me, I'm shocked, really, a culture shock that somebody has spoken to me, a stranger has spoken to me.
Well, Dave has been trying to make eye contact. How's that been going?
It's very difficult to make eye contact. I got what I would call partial eye contact with someone when I was on my way out of the train, and it was a look that kind of read like, this train is crowded, yes? It's like, well, I agree, it certainly is. But it stopped in the middle.
Tell us about some of the failures.
There was a time that I looked at someone and they turned their head away. Another time I looked at somebody and they looked down with their eyes. Luckily, nobody's looked up because, that's rude.
Wow. People do approach you, though. There are exceptions to that. For instance, if you look like you lost, it's simply incredible. We just had this on the way over here, where we really didn't want help so much, but the guy literally took us all the way to the entrance of our subway line. And, how do you tell somebody, we know how to do this, thanks. I don't want to be rude to the guy.
Yeah, that's true. Some people will approach you to, practice English, and especially, late at night, if you're on the train and you've had
a
few
drinks. Is that what they're doing? They're practicing English on us? Is that we're being used?
Yeah, you may be being used there, but you'll find that people will do that, and salarymen, and get a bit. They'll buy you drinks. If you talk to people, you'll definitely make friends.
Okay, so there's another phone call.
Hey. Okay, there is a geisha girl. I don't know if that's a politically incorrect term.
Well, she's not worthy of photography.
No, she's
from you.
She's a geisha. I've been breaking cultural stereotypes using technology. When I say that, I set a goal for myself before coming to Japan that I would photograph three extremely fat Japanese women. And I'm proud to say that I have five or six in my camera at this point, and it's getting kind of crowded.
What you don't know is that we already ratted you out while you ran away.
Ah, you guys!
But you're up to five.
I think I might, that might have been six. I'm losing track now. When I get home, I'm going to have to lay them all out side by side.
Well, I think there might be a book deal in this for you. Definitely. We have other people coming up that know you. Okay, but they don't know they're going on the radio.
Yeah, anyway.
We're standing here in the middle of not in the middle of the street, but on the side of the street in what district is this again?
Ginza.
The Ginza district. And this is, I guess, the Tokyo edition of Off the Wall. Although I have to do another edition of the program from Japan, because next week at this time I'm going to be on a freighter. And I'm almost certain not to have internet there. And the problem with that is there's no way to upload the show if I record a program. I will record something on the boat, but I won't be able to upload it until I get back to California. So that means I most likely will have to record something else here and upload it for playback when I'm in the middle of the ocean. Now, Stuart, you had some interesting things to say to me last time I talked to you about the whole freighter, statistics about how a number of them never seem to make it to the other side. It's made for some interesting discussions with some other people. But, I'm going to go through with it anyway and see what happens. I'll have my satellite phone on me at all times. And you'll be the first person I call if something goes amiss.
That's right. Yeah, one of the things we discussed was that when an airliner crashes, it's big news. I think a small airliner, wherever you are in the world, it crashes. Now, if a ship goes down in a storm, it's not big news. And I can't remember how many. It was like 100. Was it 100 a year I mentioned?
It was more than 100 a year, yeah. And it was something like 2,000 or 3,000 people lost a year, and most of it not being reported.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, so you know, strange things happen at sea, and you'll have a great chance to talk to the seafarers about like giant waves and like these freak waves and strange things that can happen at sea, and what your legal status is if somebody murders you at sea.
Tell us something about that.
Yeah, I heard a story once about there was a murder at sea, and a seafarer told me this. There was a murder at sea, and they got to the port, and the body is in the ship's freezer. And so they contacted the authorities and said, we had a murder at sea, what should we do? And they said,
Was the killer there?
Yeah, the killer was on board ship. I think he had an argument with the captain and maybe just knifed him, and that was...
It was the captain he killed?
I think so, yeah. So there's somebody that can take over the ship, like a junior captain there at all times, the first mate. But they said, the local authority said, well, the law at sea is the law of the flag, the country your flag is flying. So they may have been flying like a flag of convenience like Panama or any small Caribbean island or anywhere that offers these services. And so they have to contact the embassy of that country and get a lawyer who's a specialist in that country's law, and they found out, what is the law for somebody, who was killed at sea? And they said, well, our law only extends as far as our territorial borders. So you're in international waters. There's no law. We don't. Our country's law doesn't cover murder at sea. So
if I find myself on a Panamanian freighter, you're saying I can pretty much kill whoever I want with impunity.
Yeah, I think you should get legal advice before you take that course of action.
Now, how would that conversation go exactly?
Well, if I were you, I would kill them all, because if you kill just one or two people, you might make somebody on the boat sad, and then they might try to kill you.
Oh, revenge, yeah. But I haven't finished the 8-hour course on boat driving.
Right. Yeah. It's called riding.
Well, hopefully that's all I'll be doing is riding and not swimming or anything like that.
Yeah, and I hope Dave's not considering stowing away on the ship, too.
What happens to stowaways?
Yeah, stowaways can disappear. Because, where are you going to put this guy off? You've got to deal with the immigration at the next port, and they're not going to take a guy without a passport or without papers. So, and the guy has either got to live on the ship until he can get back to the country where he came on, and even then they may not take him because he may not have papers for that country. So,
and it holds up the whole process, cargo that you have to, drugs you have to run, and whatever it is you're doing.
That's right, and you'll be in big trouble if you miss the schedule for your delivery at the next port. Your captain's going to be in big trouble. So
Stuart, how would a captain solve a problem like that?
Well, the stowaway might disappear, and he might be swimming.
Is it true, Stuart, that sea captains can make people invisible? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, I think so. I think that's what happens. Yeah.
Wow.
But you should ask. I think you should definitely interview the captain and ask him. What would happen? What happens to stowaways?
Well, I imagine I'll be the center of attention. When you go on a freighter, at least this one, the maximum number of passengers is 8. I'm already taking a room that's meant for 2,
right.
And there might not be any more passengers. I might be the only one, and they might be asking me a whole lot of questions.
That's true. Yeah, and I think they'll enjoy having somebody new on board because. You have like long periods where you don't meet anybody else but the other crew members.
You know what I do if I was running a freighter? That's sort of a goof, for the person that is the passenger. Hide. Everybody hide. I'm walking around. Where's the cat? Where the boat? Is the boat abandoned? Did pirates come aboard? And will pirates come aboard? Is that something else I have to worry about?
I think across the Pacific you're safe, but within Asian waters, definitely there are small boats will come up at night time, and there's usually one.
At least these are Asian waters. I'm in Japan.
In Japan, well, you're on the Pacific side, so I'm thinking more about like the Straits of Malacca and Malaysia, Indonesia, around there.
Okay, well, we'll stay away from those, I guess. So as you can see, I've got quite an adventure coming up, a freighter trip across the Pacific Ocean, 10 days on the high seas, and really no contact at all. I do have the satellite phone, but I don't think I have anything else. It's going to be great.
Do you have batteries for the satellite phone?
That's what I forgot. Well, okay, we'll go shopping and get things taken care of. that's pretty much going to do it for us here tonight on this special edition of Off the Wall, coming to you from the streets of Tokyo. We've been speaking with Stuart and Chris, who are residents here from other countries who now live here.
And speaking to you from Brooklyn, this is Dave.
Well, now, Dave, you're going to be in a strange position on Tuesday, because Tuesday is when you leave this. You're going to have two Tuesdays. You're leaving Japan on Tuesday, and you're arriving on Tuesday. So I think you get back before this show actually airs.
I don't normally pay attention to the day of the week, so I don't plan on letting it affect me. But if it does, I'll just go back to sleep again.
And get your dreams retrieved that were confiscated when you went over this side. All right. Well, it's Emmanuel Goldstein. I'm not quite sure what you're going to be hearing next week. It's going to be some kind of pre-recorded program, unless there's a miracle and I get internet access, I'll record something fresh from the boat. But otherwise, you'll have to wait a couple of weeks to hear how that turns out. I want to thank Ivan for his help in procuring the song that you're about to hear from Big Audio Dynamite. Until next week, have a good night. Juicy.